You see, life was quite different when I was your age, Michael.
How? How was it different, Grandma?
Oh, my. Let me tell you. Many years ago, when I was a little girl, I remember when the first Model A...
What was it like when you were growing up? 20, 30, 40 years from now, how well will your memory serve you when questions arise about life long ago? This is Focus on the Family. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. And today we're going to go back to a popular broadcast that we aired just a little over a year ago. With us in the studio was a guest who specializes in helping people think through and share their past. Stick around because I know you'll benefit from the upcoming conversation. One of the reasons we're coming back to this so quickly is because so many folks got in touch with us and indicated that they appreciated the conversation and wanted to know more. Here's our host, Dr. Dobson.
Mike, we have a Focus on the Family board member in the studio with us today.
I know that.
Again today. And, Bob Beal is with us. He has served in that capacity as a board member for almost, how many years, Bob? Since the very beginning of Focus on the Family. I guess it goes back to 1977, doesn't
77.
It? 77. Hmm. Bob is president of his own organization, Master Planning Group International. He consults with numerous Christian organizations now around the world. Bob, I always love it when you come by for a visit.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Mike, I think we ought to start today by telling people why Bob is here today. He came in yesterday, and we've been dealing with a very important question that our listeners and our friends out there often ask. People often say, we understand what Focus on the Family is trying to do. We understand who you are. What happens, however, when the Lord takes Jim Dobson to heaven and he's out of here? What happens to this ministry? And people ask that question as though that has never occurred to us, And we're very keenly aware that I'm not going to be here forever. And the board has for at least 5 or 6 years been working on that very issue.
I know they have.
On the transition, on the succession, on what the ministry will be like in the post-Dobson era. Now, I think that I'm in excellent health. And as a matter of fact, I just went through a 5-hour exam and the doctor said I'm in wonderful health. But I won't be here forever. I hope the Lord gives me 15 to 20 more years. But, you just never know.
Sure.
And so we feel that good stewardship requires us to think that through and to begin planning for that day when it comes.
Well, and the interesting aspect of it as well is that the answer evolves.
Of course.
You asked the question 10 years ago and the answer is different than if you ask the question today. So we need to continue to ask that question.
Mike, you'd be surprised at how complicated this issue really is, because the real question is not who steps into Jim Dobson's shoes at a moment like that. The question is how you keep this organization on track with its original intent.
Exactly.
What are the core values? What are the non-negotiables? What are the little course corrections that you want to put in place so you keep it from drifting off into areas that leave those fundamental principles with which we begin? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've been working on today and outlining. And Bob, again, I've really appreciated the wisdom that you've brought to that very important question.
Thank you.
We want to turn a corner and talk about something else, not about me.
Yeah, let's get happier. That's a bit of a morbid subject.
You know what? It is something we all have to face.
It sure
and it's
is.
Very difficult to do that. It's hard for me to sit here and talk to Bob about the time when Jim Dobson is out of here and his influence is over. But you have to do that.
Well, and you have to do that as a parent, too. I mean, this is an easy transition into the rest of the subject today.
It sure is.
Because as moms and dads, we have certain values, certain courses that we'd like our children to take, and how do we ensure that they at least understand that?
Well, Bob Beal has come up with a couple of suggestions in that regard that I think are relevant to what we were just talking about, but are also very, very practical and very useful right now. Mm-hmm. And the first, Bob, as I understand it, occurred to you when you visited your wife Cheryl's grandmother some years ago.
Frances Shoup. Mrs. Shoup was a godly lady. She was probably 93 at the time, has now gone on to heaven. But we were talking with her sort of late one night, maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock. It was just getting dusk in Michigan. And she said, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here." And I'd never seen her with a tear in her eye. She was a sort of a stoic, matronly lady. And I'd never seen her with a tear, but she started to cry. And so it got Cheryl and my immediate attention. She said, "This is the loneliest part of my day between dark and bedtime, or when I wake up in the middle of the night and can't sleep." So when I went to sleep that night, I was still on California time, and so my mind got going, what could I do to fill those lonely hours for her, and at the same time, capture some of the wisdom and experience and perspective she had, because she remembers seeing her first automobile, her first electric light bulb. She remembers just all kinds of things that we take so for granted, just like I remember my first computer, seeing the first computer, first television, first CD laser, disc. First CD disc, which now our kids will say, "You did? What was that like to see the first computer?"
Believe it or not, kids, they used to sell something they call records.
Yeah. So basically, what I did was started trying to think up the questions I would like to ask her if I had hours and hours and hours and hours, that would capture the family history and let her sit there and write and remember all the good times she had in her past.
From that came a concept for conveying to younger children information that would be lost if not put down on paper. Explain how that actually became a book called The Memories Book.
Yes. Karl Marx said, if you can separate a people from their history, you can persuade them of anything. But the Bible in Deuteronomy says to teach the children the good things God has done for you in your lifetime. So what I did was come up with a book that you can write in. It's like a guided diary. I find that most people don't like to sit down with a blank sheet of paper and try to write out their family history or what God's meant to them or anything else. But they do enjoy writing down a family history and what they've experienced in life, and telling people what God has meant to them or what life has meant. And so basically wrote out about 60 questions and then color questions. For example, one of the 60 questions is, what was Christmas season like when you were a child? And then each of those questions have what I call color questions. What kind of a tree did you have? How did you decorate? What kind of presents did you give and get? What family traditions did your family have? Did your school or church do something special? Did you go on sleigh rides? What smells do you remember? What was your best Christmas present before the age of 13? How is Christmas different then than now? And what do you see as the importance of Christmas? There is where a grandparent who really is a committed believer can explain the birth of Christ and what it means. And it's something that I guarantee your children's 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 children will read, no matter how pagan they might be, you know, in the year 2080 or something, if the Lord hasn't come back.
What was the most exciting day of your life is one of the questions that asks. What's the most meaningful gift you ever received? What have been your most enjoyable travel and vacation experiences? How would you describe yourself? What are your vital statistics? What information should the executor of your estate know? What did you enjoy most with your parents and your brothers and sisters when you were growing up? That kind of information, unless somebody takes the trouble to put it down, is lost forever. And, you know, my parents are gone now, and my grandparents are gone. I had, like everybody else, 8 great-grandparents. I only knew one of them. I only knew of 2 of them. The other 6 I could not name. It had to be a Dobson in there someplace. I couldn't name, and I don't know a thing about them. That information is lost forever, and now there's no one I can ask. You know, I couldn't get the answers to those questions, even from my parents' life, because they didn't take the time to put it down, and it is gone.
Let me show you how powerful this really is, Jim. Let's say, for example, you did have a book like this or some writings, an original scripted copy of something that your great-great-great-great-grandfather, who was living when Abraham Lincoln was shot, that he had written out. What are the chances you would read that sometime in your lifetime?
What do you think?
Okay. Now, we were alive when Kennedy was shot, and our great-great-great-grandchildren will want to know, what was it like? You mean, you actually were there? You remember where you were? What happened? What'd that feel like? And just each generation has certain things. They would like an eyewitness account, a real-life, heart-to-heart experience account of what someone in their family experienced and saw and smelt and tasted and touched during certain historic events like
that. You know, this is very relevant to me. My daughter had an assignment at school. She needed to interview me or my wife, Nancy, about the 1970s, and then she was to write a paper about that era. So she had a list of questions that she asked me about the 1970s, many of the same kind of questions that you've just mentioned. And when you refer to Kennedy being shot, well, of course, 1974, I believe, was when Richard Nixon resigned from his office. At least it occurred during the 70s. The Vietnam War ended then. There were so many events that we lived through, and when you stop and think about it, will be fascinating. Our perspective will be fascinating to those young
Isn't
people
it
down
amazing,
through the years.
Mike, that they don't remember that? Isn't that amazing that perhaps the majority of people living today were not alive or at least don't remember the assassination of President Kennedy? Yes. That was just yesterday for me. Mm. You know, and the years do have a way of flipping by. And if you don't preserve those kinds of feelings, emotions, those kinds of events, they're gone.
You know, one of the things that really gets me ticked off is revisionist history. You know, people are rewriting history. I watch the documentaries about the way they saw things, and I say, that wasn't the way it was. Yeah. I saw it. I was there. It wasn't that way. But this is an opportunity to tell people from a Christian perspective, from a conservative Christian perspective, here's what I saw and experienced during my lifetime. And here are the things I really believe in. Here are the things to really hold on to.
Yeah, there's the key, because you're actually passing down not just facts and history and events. You're passing down the family heritage.
And perspective.
Yeah, and especially the faith, if it is there. Mike, you know that we have, in my family, Shirley's strong emphasis has been to preserve traditions in the family.
Right.
Traditions have a way of telling your children who we are as a family and how we got here. And how we're unique, how we're different from other families.
Sure.
I remember my great-grandmother, when I was a child, talking to me about life on the plains and how these cougars, pumas, whatever they called them then, would come up to the log cabin and scratch on the windows and the door. She gave me, as a small child, a picture of what her childhood had been like that I would have not gotten anywhere else.
Jim, you know Kip Jordan.
Yes.
Kip told me this story. He and his wife got a copy of the Memories book for their four parents a few years ago. His wife's father, filled one out with stories like you're just telling, with pumas and panthers and the plains and all that. And then he developed Alzheimer's disease. So now he's in a nursing home, doesn't remember any of it. She takes the Memories book back and reads him what he experienced as a child.
My goodness.
And all of a sudden, it goes into instant memory or close memory, and he can talk about that all afternoon, expanding, explaining. But the next time he comes back, he wouldn't remember having said it.
Yeah, the stimulus of what he had written leads him back into that ear.
Yes.
You now call this the Heirloom Memories book, or at least that's one edition of it, isn't it?
Yes.
Explain what that
basically,
is.
Basically, originally I call it a priceless heirloom. What makes something priceless is that it could never be replaced regardless of the price you're willing to pay. The day your parent passes away, if you were to pay $1 billion, they couldn't write another sentence. So everything they've written ultimately becomes, by definition, priceless.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one gift that you give your parents that is guaranteed to become priceless someday. And it's a priceless heirloom to pass on to your children and then their children and their children. This is actually out of Cheryl's grandmother's memories book, the lady that the book was written for. And when it said, life growing up, what was Christmas season like as a child? And by the time she got ready to do this, she was so feeble she couldn't write anymore at all much. So Cheryl's father actually transcribed this as she just talked it. He wrote it down, like you might write something down. But we had the foresight to let her write something in the book.
Mm.
And she actually, in her own hand, wrote about four sentences, even though she was about 97 at the time, or 95, I think. Very feeble, but we have in her own handwriting something in the book, because that is, in fact, priceless. You couldn't ever replace that. But just listen to the simplicity with which this lady writes. She said, we were poor as youngsters. I remember one Christmas when we were going to Grandpa and Grandma's house for Christmas. We had no tree. So Mother and Dad fixed up Mary and my high chair as best they could to be substitutes for trees. In the morning, there was a doll, an orange, and a popcorn ball on each of them. We were so tickled. We didn't want to stay at Grandma's long. We were so anxious to get back home and play with our dolls. Later, about 10 years of age, I had to give up the doll I had at that time and give it to a smaller girl who wanted one who had lost her mother. That was a hard thing to do. I cried. Period.
My goodness.
When Cheryl read this, my wife read this, she cried. Yeah. 10-year-old girl giving up her doll.
Yeah.
You know? And so for Christmas, I understand her grandma's now 94. We got her a $50 doll. We got a really nice doll. We gave it to a 94-year-old woman. She held it and cried. First doll she'd had in 90 years or whatever. And we would never have known that. We had never known what to do. We'd never been able to give that gift unless she'd written this out.
That is wonderful, Bob. Now, going back to what you said earlier, this is not only for the younger generation, but for those in the twilight hours, maybe,
yes,
who want something to do with the latter years of their,
yes,
lives.
It's a perfect gift to give any parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, mentor, friend.
Are there places for pictures in the book?
Yes. There's not only a place for pictures. It isn't designed specifically for pictures, Mike, but what I tell people to do, because it's not a picture album per se, is to number each picture in their whole collection.
Oh, I
Most
see.
People have a shoebox full, mm-hmm, of pictures. Number picture 1 through 300 and then write out a little story about each one. And it turns out to be, it makes the whole shoebox come alive instead of a bunch of pictures no one knows even who are once the parent is no longer there to explain.
I don't know that we planned it this way, but there is a linkage between what Bob is here to do today, talking about Focus on the Family, and in this product, because both are looking to a time when we're not here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Moses said, teach us to number our days. That's essentially what we're doing. We're recognizing life is brief, and if we want to convey what we care about to the next generation, we need to take some time to get that accomplished.
Most books have a shelf life of about a year. I mean, they're hot for a year, and then no one remembers them much. It's one of my life passions to get this book into over 100,000 homes. Over a period of time. It may take me a long time, but I'll never tire of explaining it to another person so that they can have 100,000 Christian family homes with the family traditions written down in terms of their favorite scriptures, their favorite traditions, and how to pass that on to future generations. I think it's critical.
Well, we've got 5 minutes left, Bob. Let's turn the corner and talk about the other idea that you had for the family. Now, this one came out of your relationship with your son, Jay.
Right.
Explain it.
Basically, when Jay was in about the sixth grade, he always needed a few extra dollars. And so he'd come and say, Dad, can I have some extra money? So I tried to get him to work. I tried to get him to do odd jobs, but there weren't many around the house. So one day I said to him, Jay, how would you like to make about $300? And it was like his head snapped like I'd offered him a new Corvette, you know, or something. And he said, sure, how? And I said, I've got some principles that I've made up and collected from wise people. And I would like to have you memorize those, like you'd memorize Scripture. Say them word perfectly. Tell me what they mean in your words, and tell me how you'd apply it in your life. And when you memorize them, I will give you a dollar piece the first time. That's $100. Second time through, you just have to refresh, and I'll give you 75 cents a piece. Third time, 50 cents. Fourth time, 25 cents. And the fifth time, if you say them all through, stem to stem, I'll give you a $100 bonus. He said, when do I get started? I say, oh, by the way, you have to memorize them five at a time. You can't just memorize one and come in.
Yeah.
So he said, okay. And so over the next 2 years, he memorized 100 principles and said them five times to me. But it was interesting that every time he said them, he was a little bit older, so his application was a little bit different, and et cetera.
Hmm.
So he made some money. But it turned out to be a tremendous way to share with them the principles that I teach presidents. I've consulted with over 150 presidents in the last 17, 18 years.
Corporate presidents, ministry
presidents, senior pastors, etc. And these are the principles, the 100 principles I teach presidents and senior pastors. But they're at a probably 16 years and above level. So it's sort of like, how do you get it so that students can learn it 30 years before they're my age, you know, kind of thing.
Now, you have put those 100 principles in a book called the On My Own Handbook.
Yes.
100 Secrets of Success to Prepare Young People for Life in the Real World.
Now, Bob, would these 100 secrets of success be universal in application? I mean, if my child, my teenager, read this book, would there be some things I might want to adjust because of our own family heritage, things that I might want them to remember that would be different than what you've listed in there?
What I suggest in here, Mike, is to use these 100 as a starter list and add your own family's traditions. My
That's
dad
great.
Has what he calls nutshells. And so he puts in the margin of his book his own principles that he would have me know. By the way, I also gave this to the publisher under the condition that they would never ask more than $10 a book for it. I told them, if you ever ask more than $10, you can't have it, because I want it so that every student everywhere could have it. You'd be interested in this, that a lot of youth groups are using it as a discussion guide, and they'll take a principle a night and discuss it over a period of a year's time or so.
How does this apply to your life?
Uh-huh. And then we have an orthodontist that buys them a box at a time and gives them to all the kids that has worked on their teeth as a graduation present, simply because he said, I don't know what else I could give them that would help all their life for $10. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a real simple process.
Well, Mike, in those two concepts that we've talked about today, I think you get a window into Bob Beal and our board member, and you can see why he's contributed so much to what we're trying to do, because he does come from that cognitive perspective, planning, thinking through how best to do something, and we have enjoyed working together for all these years. I really do love and appreciate you and Cheryl, Bob.
That's mutual, Jim.
And appreciate these two products, which, Mike, you're going to make available. Any last thing you want to say?
There are two things I'd like to end with, Jim. On the memories book, one of the fondest memories of my lifetime, when I lay my head on the pillow for the final time, will be of us together, you and me and Cheryl and Shirley, at Her Majesty's Theater in London, seeing Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera. But things like that, memories, I will write out in great detail to let my children know of memories like that. Hmm. And I'd like to end with the principle that I end the On My Own book with, because kids read it thinking, here's how I'm going to succeed. You know, here's what they teach presidents. This will really help me. The very final thought of the book is this: you have only one life, 'twill soon be passed, and only what's done for God will last.
My grandmother had that on the wall of her house when
so
I was a kid.
So did my grandmother.
Along with another one that said, whichever way the wind doth blow, some heart is glad to have it so. So blow it east or blow it west, the way it blows, that way is best. Why I remember that, I don't know, but that those two plaques were on the wall.
You see, those principles that we brand in the brains of children last them a lifetime, just like scriptures do. And these are leadership principles that once they grab them, they never forget them.
Well, Bob, thanks again for coming, not only being here for this broadcast, but being with me to talk about the succession issues that we were discussing. I appreciate you and look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
Bob Beal, one of our board members and a great friend of Focus on the Family since its inception, has been our guest on today's edition of the broadcast. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our producer was John Fuller. Engineering and production were handled by Pete Stokey and Keith Valenzuela. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. And our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we will again turn our hearts toward home.